I'm in the tiny village of Cetățele in the northwestern corner of Romania. It's Sunday morning and the bell is calling the faithful to church. I'm Blanche Giroard, and for this edition of Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service, I've come to a country where most people are Orthodox Christians. But the ones I'm here to meet belong to the minority Greek Catholic tradition, one of over 20 Eastern Catholic churches. Their Mass sounds different from that in the Western Catholic Church, but they're in full communion with Rome, meaning that they fully belong to the Catholic fold and agree with the Vatican on all important points of theology. But there's one big difference.
I'm Father Augustine Butica, and I'm a priest of the Greek Catholic Church in Romania. This is my wife, Violeta, and these are my four children, Stefania, Luisa, Emanuela, and David.
Yes, you heard correctly. Father Augustine is a Catholic priest, but he's married and has four children, which is completely normal in the Greek Catholic Church. In this programme, I'll be exploring why in most of the Catholic Church priests have to be celibate, meaning that they're not allowed to marry, and why, at the same time, there are pockets within the Church where married priests are the norm. Could Father Augustine and his family become a role model for the Church more widely? And if so, could that help alleviate the acute shortage of priests in other parts of the Catholic world?
This is our kitchen. Don't mind the disorder here.
It looks like candy stripes, pink white candy stripes.
Yes. My wife did it.
Oh, it's pretty.
She likes to decorate things in the house.
The Buticas were only able to build their house with the help of supporters from other countries. The local church had been unable to provide accommodation, so as a young family, they had to share a house with Violetta's parents.
That house had two bedrooms. One bedroom was for our parents-in-law and the other one for us. Just imagine, five of us, David wasn't born, five of us were living in one room. The whole room was full with beds and cupboards.
Despite those cramped conditions, the Buticas flourished and appear today to be the epitome of a happy family. It's hard to imagine Father Augustine without his wife and children. And yet, he tells me, his original plan was different.
When I really started to study to become a priest, I wanted to be a celibate priest because in our church we have both choices. But after 3 years of studies, I realized that that wasn't my way to be a celibate priest. So I changed and I decided to become a married priest.
What made you decide it wasn't your way?
I hated, especially in the seminary, in the evening, I hated the solitude in my room. I studied in Rome and every student had his own room. And especially in the evening was terrible.
What made you think you did want to be a celibate priest before that?
Just the ideal to be a priest who offers himself totally to the church, to Christ, and that was the ideal. And after that, I realized that I couldn't follow that ideal.
How much did meeting Violeta change your mind?
She's here. No, my decision to become a married priest was before I knew her, so she didn't change my mind.
Back in England, I heard a very different story.
So, this is a picture here of Jan and I. It goes back over 30 years before we were married, and it's on the beach in Malta.
Alex Walker was a young priest in Kendal in northern England in the 1980s. There he met Jan, an exercise teacher. The two became friends and got to know each other's families, which is how they ended up together on that beach. So we have Jan in a very fetching white bikini, and we have you incredibly tanned with a very bulging pair of white Speedos. my goodness. And were you a priest at the time?
Then I would have just, on the cusp, I think.
On the cusp of leaving the priesthood, that is. For unlike Father Augustine, Alex, as a Western Catholic priest, had to decide between priesthood and marriage. He first met Jan when she knocked at his door to hand over some money from an exercise class she'd held in the parish hall.
She was in a leotard, she had a coat on, she was clutching a bag of money. She said, "Father, this is for you." And she was very pretty, very attractive. And I thought, wow, this is a really nice introduction to the parish, having such an attractive lady come to the door and say, "Here's some money for you."
I looked at this long-haired, lovely person, thinking he can't be the priest because he's too handsome. He just had a lovely, kind face with beautiful, kind eyes. I met Alex then the following Saturday at evening mass, and I just thought he was a lovely, gentle, very charismatic person.
It sounds like they're almost the thoughts you don't want to have. You know, you see a priest and he's charming and engaging and lovable.
I never, obviously, never thought it would be a romantic sort of connection I had with him. But we became friends and we were best friends for 3 years before anything romantic ever happened.
There must have been something that moved it on a step further.
Alex's mum became very poorly, and I phoned Alex to say, would he like to come for tea? And he came up and he became upset. And that was really the first time that he cuddled me, because I didn't want to see him so hurt and so alone. And it was really from that day that I just thought, I can't imagine how Alex, being so friendly with everybody, how would he cope when he was in a parish on his own one day?
In love, but wrestling with their consciences, both Alex and Jan did their best to stay away from one another. For a considerable length of time, they were successful, but not forever. You actually ended up in bed together before you resigned. Did that just feel inevitable? Could that have been prevented?
Maybe it could have been prevented with greater willpower. But our relationship did become physical before I'd actually resigned priesthood. And I think when you get to that situation, that's when you seriously have to make a decision about the priesthood and celibacy, or whether or not you could no longer live the celibate life. And I didn't want to make Jan the reason why I was going to resign ministry, because if she said to me, "I don't want to marry you, I don't want to live the rest of my life with you," then I didn't want to skirtle back to priesthood with that same tension reigning in my heart.
So, Father Augustine, an Eastern Catholic priest, is allowed to be married, but Alex, a Western Catholic priest, had to resign to marry Jan. How does that make sense? Why is celibacy only a rule for Western Catholic priests, and what kind of a rule is it? John Allen is the editor and president of Crux, an independent online news site covering the Catholic Church.
Celibacy in the Catholic Church is a discipline, not a dogma. It is not necessary. It is a practice of the Western Church that grew up over the centuries. It has to do with the total giving of oneself to the vocation of the priesthood, total availability to the people one serves.
So celibacy is not a dogma, which means it can be changed, even though it goes back about 1,000 years. And the reason why Eastern Catholic priests, like Father Augustine, are allowed to marry is purely historical too. It goes back to the time after Christianity split into an Eastern and Western branch in 1054. Some of the Eastern churches sought to remain in full communion with Rome, and the Vatican allowed them to keep their rituals and customs, including married priests. But now the issue of celibacy in the Western Church is up for discussion again, at a meeting or synod of bishops from the Amazon region in Rome this month. Among other things, they will consider what to do about the great shortage of priests in that part of the world.
In Europe and the United States, we complain about priest shortages, but the truth is, both in Europe and the United States, there is a ratio of one Catholic priest for every 1,300 baptized Catholics. In other parts of the world, in sub-Saharan Africa, that ratio was 1 to 5,600. In Latin America, it is 1 to 7,800. And in regions such as the Amazon, it can go as high as 1 to 15,000, 16,000, 17,000. It's a fact that the pressure for wider use of a married priesthood today tends to come from those parts of the world where the priest shortage is the most acute and where church leaders there believe that by being able to ordain married men, they could expand the number of priests. And at this synod on the Amazon in particular, we are expecting a very lively debate over what is known as the viri probati. That's a Latin phrase that means tested married men. And it refers to the idea of allowing bishops to choose from local communities men who are pillars of their community, who, you know, maybe they teach catechism at their parish or they're known to be very faithful Catholics who are also married and have families, calling them into the priesthood to help serve where there are no celibate priests available.
Such a plan would open up the priesthood to at least some married men in the Western Catholic Church. But even there, they wouldn't be the first.
The mystery of
Father Jeff Woolnough is celebrating Mass at his parish in Southend-on-Sea, about an hour from London. He started his ministry as an Anglican priest, but became unhappy when the Church of England allowed women to become bishops. So he joined a special branch of the Catholic Church, set up by Pope Benedict to allow former Anglicans to become Catholics, while still keeping some of their customs and practices.
The partaking of the body and blood of Christ, we may be gathered into one.
Between 400 and 500 Anglican priests have moved over to the Catholic Church in the last 25 years. And like Father Jeff, many of them are married. Over coffee after Mass, Jeff told me, for this BBC programme, what a difference his wife, Julie, makes to his ministry.
We get regular calls 2 or 3 in the morning from the local hospital to A&E, to critical care, if there's been an accident and there are patients that need the last rites of the Catholic Church. You're disoriented when the phone rings that time of the early hours of the morning. But Julie's very good, you know, she's come and get up, here's his clean shirt to put on, half a cup of black coffee to wake me up, and I'm there within 20 minutes normally to do what I need to do. But if it's been a difficult situation where parents are asking you, they see the collar, you're God's friend, why have you done this to my child? You know, I come back, I can't sleep, then she's there for me to share that problem with, and I've always found that incredibly helpful.
Some of Father Jeff's parishioners were delighted to see the arrival of a married priest, but others were less supportive.
If you have a parish that is only used to celibate priests and a married priest turns up, then quite understandably there's going to be a few shock waves going on, a mini earth tremor, if you like, within the parish. I do know for a fact that some parishioners moved on to the next door parish without even meeting me, so I can't take that personally. But I think that some of our parishioners, after this period of time, have realised that the wedding ring actually is invisible in the sense that we do the work for the parish, that we are priests at the end of the day.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Yet strong reservations remain against married priests among some lay Catholics. As I found out when I spoke to members of the International Congregation at St Mary of the Angels in West London.
I am pro-celibacy, as the Church is, but in the same time I consider that it's a huge challenge.
Let's go slowly. You have to go very slowly, like in any big change. It would be very difficult for me, as a Catholic, to envisage a priest to be married.
I think they should allow married men to be priests. They feel a calling to God and they have to already be married. Why not?
Family is quite a demanding ministry. And I don't think, for instance, if you are in a city, you do be able to look after your family and your parish.
The parish priest at St Mary's is Father Keith Baltrop. He's celibate himself and believes that it's a good discipline, even if it's difficult.
I personally approach it by seeing it as an opportunity to reach out to others. I think a certain level of loneliness is inevitable in a priest's life, but the trick is to somehow turn it around so that instead of becoming something that weighs on you as a burden, it's felt as a kind of an impulse which pushes you out of your comfort zone to make all sorts of relationships with other people.
So do you think celibacy has helped your ministry?
I think it has for me, yes. It's a great blessing, it's a great joy. I think the availability it gives you, the freedom it gives you to reach out to others is a wonderful opportunity.
But some people argue that celibacy can lead priests to reach out inappropriately, even to sexually abuse children. John Allen says there's been an intense debate over whether celibacy is at least partly to blame for the child sex abuse scandals that have beset the church in recent years.
Those who believe it is will say that if priests were able to express their sexuality in normal, healthy adult ways, they would not be driven to do it in these inappropriate and abusive ways. Those who don't buy that will say, if you look at the data, most child sexual abuse occurs in the family, and it is committed by men who are not celibate. And so therefore, they doubt very much that celibacy has anything to do with this. There's been a lot of research on this point. Where most observers are today is they would say the Catholic Church needs to have a debate about celibacy, but it ought to leave sex abuse out of that conversation. They are two separate problems.
Back in Romania, I join Father Augustine's three daughters in the kitchen, where they and their mother Violetta are preparing lunch. What I want to know is it like to be the daughter of a Catholic priest? Do they have to watch how they behave? Stefania, the eldest, is 22 and a medical student.
I have to be like kind of a model for the other kids my age, so I have to behave and to be like a lady.
So what do your friends do that you would not feel comfortable doing?
Like heavy partying and drinking and smoking and things like this.
But you've never minded?
No, I've never minded.
And you have a boyfriend?
Yes, I have.
So as the daughter of a priest, does that affect how you behave with your boyfriend?
Not really. I have a steady boyfriend. I'm 4 years now, and we are thinking for the future. It's not just a fling or something.
So, do you have a boyfriend yet?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you all have boyfriends? My goodness. So with your boyfriend, would you be able, for example, to bring him home overnight and share a room with him as the daughter of a priest?
No, that is not accepted. I never done that.
And would you want to do that?
Only after I marry him. So not now. I'm waiting.
Oh, my goodness. These are all dresses made by you?
Yes. And these are some I'm working on now. This was for my 18th birthday.
Emanuela, who is 18, is an accomplished dressmaker who's learnt all her skills from the internet.
Which one?
This one.
So this is a credible gold, what is it, gold net covered in sequins.
Yes.
And then at the top, ruched gold corset. And this you wore for your 18th birthday?
Yes, I made it a few days before it.
It's lucky Emanuela can make lovely clothes for herself and for her family, because money is tight in the Boutica household. Violetta and Father Augustine have taken me outside to show me their garden.
She's the gardener.
Violetta, you're the gardener?
Yeah, loves to gardener. Even flowers. Her name is Violetta.
Violetta. So what do you grow here? It looks like beans. Are these beans?
Yeah, these are beans. And inside...
in the greenhouse.
Yeah. We have cucumbers and tomatoes.
Growing their own vegetables helps them feed their family. But it's not enough. And as the children grew up, Violetta explains, they realised they'd have to do more.
The solution was for me to find a job to supplement the family's income. At the same time, I'm continuing to take care of the children, preparing food and growing our own vegetables.
And what job do you do?
I'm a primary school teacher.
Would you be able to manage financially as a family if you didn't have this job?
No, I don't think so.
The need to maintain whole families, rather than individual celibate men, is one of the main practical arguments put forward by those in the Western Church who are against allowing priests to marry. But, says Crispian Hollis, retired Bishop of Portsmouth in southern England, money should be irrelevant when it comes to maintaining the central ritual of the Catholic Church, the Mass.
The most important thing that the priest does is to celebrate the sacraments. And if we want to have Mass as the focal point of our Catholic communities, then we've got to have priests to celebrate it, and we've got to find the means of supporting them.
Bishop Crispian knows all too well about the lack of parish priests. Now 82, he's still regularly called upon to celebrate Mass.
I'm as busy now, in a way, at weekends as I ever was before, because I'm filling in and helping out in parishes where there are not enough priests, or where a priest is sick or away on holiday and there's nobody to replace him. I'm very happy to do that. But at the same time, I see parishes being combined. We've got two or three parishes all under one priest now, and that's increasing the burden, increasing the load on him. And many of our priests are not in their first flush of youth. They're getting tired, and they can get dispirited as well.
But if the Catholic Church does change the rules to allow all priests to be married, won't the priesthood just be faced with a whole new set of problems, such as adultery and divorce? According to Father Augustine, the Greek Catholic Church is no stranger to these problems, and it has a way of dealing with them.
If the priest is guilty, he can't be any more a priest. His mission is over in the church. If the wife is guilty, that must be proved. If he's a good priest and the bishop needs him, he can continue to be active priest.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because usually one says it takes two. So even if one person strays, it might be because the other person's behaving in a particular way. So it's hard to apportion blame, isn't it?
When I said the guilty, I was focusing on the who asks the divorce, you see? Because always in the church, we try to conciliate the two parts. But we had a case, the priest asked the divorce. He's not a priest any longer.
So what does the future hold? Could the Synod for the Amazon pave the way for married priests throughout the Catholic Church? I asked some of the people I've spoken to for this programme. First up, John Allen from the Catholic news site Crux.
It's quite likely that if the Synod for the Amazon in October recommends to Pope Francis an expansion in the married priesthood, at the beginning, that's going to be limited on an experimental basis just to the Amazon region. However, if expanded permission for a married priesthood is given in the Amazon, it won't end there. Because then what will happen is that any place Catholics perceive a hard time generating priests, whether it's Europe, the United States, Australia, Germany, wherever, they are going to be pointing to what's going on in the Amazon as a precedent. So I think probably that will be the beginning of a transition to a situation in which priestly celibacy is optional for diocesan priests. That is, for priests who are under a local bishop and who serve in parishes in a given diocese. It probably will remain mandatory for members of religious orders, such as Franciscans, Jesuits, Dominicans, and so on. And in the end, it'll end up being probably 50-50.
I wouldn't protest at all if, as a result of the Amazon Synod, certain older married men were ordained priests for the Amazon.
Father Keith Baltrop, the celibate priest from West London.
I don't think that Pope Francis has any great agenda to abolish celibacy. I don't detect that. So I'm pretty much content with the way things are, I think. I think at the moment we've got a pretty good balance, that celibacy is the norm, but for certain good reasons it can be dispensed from.
Perhaps more surprisingly, even Father Jeff Woolnough, the ex-Anglican priest who is married, is in favour of keeping the rule of celibacy.
There was no way, I would say, from a soapbox that we should extend the priesthood to those who are married, because this is not the norm. It really isn't. Personally, you know, I still believe in the celibate priesthood, and I think it is a beautiful discipline because I see the way my colleagues operate and I have the ultimate respect for them.
I would hope, I don't know how much longer I'm going to go on for, but I would hope to see the ordination of married men in my lifetime.
82-year-old retired Bishop Crispian Hollis, who spent his lifetime as a celibate. But what about Alex Walker, the man who left the priesthood more than 30 years ago in order to marry Jan.
I still believe that I am a priest, and if the church were to call me back, it's not about whether I would like to go back. I have an obligation to go back because I'm a priest of the church.
Alex Walker's priestly vestments are in storage, under the marital bed.
Se botează servul lui Dumnezeu Andrei Daniel.
Back in Romania, Father Augustine, the married priest, wears his vestments as he baptizes a baby, surrounded by proud relatives taking photos. It's clear that Father Augustine loves his role as a priest and as a family man, and the people in the parish love both him and his family. It's strange to think that he might have taken a very different path. Looking back, do you think you could have coped with being a celibate priest?
No, I couldn't. I think if I had continued with my celibacy, for sure I would have failed.
From what I've heard from Father Augustine and others for this edition of Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service, both celibate and married men can make excellent Catholic priests. But with no marriage of minds among either the clergy or the laity, it's clearly going to be a while before married priests become a regular feature of the Catholic Church throughout the world. I'm Blanche Giroard. My producer was Christina Pommett, and this programme was a CTVC production for the BBC World Service.
I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and I'm the host of The Conversation podcast from the BBC World Service.
Oh boy, I'm overwhelmed with so much to say in such a short time.
Some recent favourites include an episode on female roadies, these two incredible women who've just been touring the world with musicians and had some incredible stories to tell.
This is a live show and sometimes things go wrong, and tonight something's gone wrong.
I also found the episode on women living with schizophrenia incredibly powerful.
She does not believe that there's such a thing as a mental illness. She still thinks that perhaps it was a demonic possession that happened to me.
Another episode was about women who were standing up to street harassment.
I'm sick of it. It's in front of my house. It's in my street. It's near my train station. It's all the time.
And I've always had female flight attendants on my wish list, and we finally got to speak to two women who had spent a lot of time up in the air.
People just stormed the door because they had to get off the plane. They were so scared.
That's The Conversation from the BBC World Service.
Can't put price tag on these emotions.
Search for The Conversation wherever you found this podcast.